Yeah, I have something I'll just put out there as a food, literally food for thought, because I don't quite know what to do with this. It's just food for thought. So over the holiday, like, and I mean like Christmas Eve morning, but I got this, anyway, I got a call from somebody who does tours here around Oahu, like spirit tours, and she takes people to these places around the island that are spiritual Hawaiian energy centers and stuff. Anyway, so she had a client, and somehow one thing led to another, and she says, oh, this lady would like a reading, and this lady really, really wanted a reading. So, okay, so we squeezed it in on, like, Christmas Eve morning, whatever. But so it's just food for thought. This is kind of interesting. I never run across anything like this before. But so the gist of the story is this lady kind of really sees energies, really can see the interaction happening between things. And I mean, you know, the way we talk, she could probably sense energy going on the phone and, you know, what's in the energy and the information and all that kind of stuff. And but the thing starts off with, and this is, again, this is just, I never read anything like this. Long time, I don't know what you call a shaman type person in Australia, you know, like an old Pintanjara tribe, Australian, I don't know what you call them, but was this person, and in seeing energies at that time, could even look up into the sky, you know, the whole reading starts off looking up to the sky and seeing this like column of energy coming from off, you know, from literally from off the planet, from outer space, and it wasn't the sun. That I could tell, the sun was in one part of the sky and the energy is coming from another, but the idea of energies, I guess, raining through the universe and like raindrops, I guess, you know, it'll hit the planet and then life on Earth responds to it, you know, plants grow and, you know, animals are energized and all kinds of stuff, you know, and then they put, you know, energy back out into from the Earth back into the universe. I don't know, I never ran into anything like that, but I just thought it was a pretty interesting. What do you do with that? I don't know, but it seems somehow that if we, you know, nobody's looking for stuff like that right now, and it just seemed like if that is something that's going on in the universe, then that, it just got me looking at, you know, I never was an energy person, so it just got me looking at, you know, energies and what you can understand or perceive or even do with it in your own life if you just, you know, I mean, start paying attention to it. And maybe I'm putting this out there as hey, just start paying attention to it because you don't know where it'll take you. But just pay attention to these kind of things. Who knows? You know.
I think it's valid.
Well, a lot of people do. I never was an energy person, and I sure as hell never thought of like streams of energy or rivers of energy out there in space just flowing that planets and stuff or would react to. But I mean, okay, why not? You know.
When I'm around other people, like there's a bonding that happens when you're with other people. And you can tap into that energy when you're not with them, and you can pick up on when they become distressed.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that many times where I've picked up the phone and called a pregnant woman because I knew she was about to call me.
Oh, okay. Interesting, right?
Okay. And so I absolutely believe this is possible for anybody to tap into that ability to listen to that level.
Yeah.
Or be present for that information and start recognizing what the information may be telling you, because if you're thinking it, it probably isn't so.
Is not so.
Correct.
Oh,
if you're
okay.
Listening,
yeah, yeah.
If you're listening and you hear, it may not be distinct what you're hearing, but you know you're hearing, and you respond
okay.
Appropriately, maybe picking up the phone,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe going, oh, that person's going to call me within the next 24 hours.
Okay.
It's weird.
But it works.
It works.
Okay. So that's okay. There's two points right there. Weird and work. So what I'd like to know from the phone is, you know, how many people think or feel squirmish about what I said, that like it's weird. It's probably just imaginary or something like that. I'm just curious.
Not me. I think it's absolutely a phenomenon that I've experienced.
That makes me
Okay. No, not necessarily. I get energies between people. I mean, how far does it go? I'm just asking. Is it possible that it even
everywhere
goes into outer space?
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I've been there. You can do it on a blue moon, and we got a blue moon coming up. Two of
right.
them. You can do it twice.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, we go ahead.
It's a thing you do to experiment with this, okay? Spend some time and ask yourself what you want to get from this experience. And then on the blue moon, at midnight, you need to be lying on the land. Looking
oh,
up at the moon.
Oh, you're not kidding about the blue moon thing. All right.
No. This is a great opportunity. It's going to happen twice.
Huh.
And so you lay on your back and you have to be focusing on the moon at midnight, straight above you.
Mm-hmm. What is the blue moon?
Well, the blue moon is the second full moon in a month. And
oh, okay.
It's going to happen the end of January and the end of March.
Mm-hmm. Fact okay. is, Europe might even see a bit of a lunar eclipse going on at the same time, so you might hear about it in the news.
And so when you are looking at the moon, you focus on the moon until you are now above the moon and let go. For me,
okay. mm-hmm.
it was quite an experience.
Hmm. Hey, if you can, write it up and email it to us.
okay.
Well, Andrew, have you never just laid there and allow yourself just to go out into the universe?
Yeah, it's the truth.
I don't know. I always wanted to, but to the degree I actually did that, I don't know.
You know, like, it's just like expanding yourself, and you expand yourself out to the point where you're out in the whole universe.
Right, right. So I can, you know, and I experienced that in mind, but, you know, actually being able to say I had an out-of-body experience, I wore a Kona, and I saw what kind of PJs you're wearing, you know, I haven't done that.
No, I'm just talking about just the sense of it, because you're not limited to this little body.
Right.
Yeah. And all you're doing is sending your energy out.
Right.
Try going into your third eye or whatever you want to call it and envision that you are an insect on the wall in Misty's house.
Hmm.
yeah.
Don't let her hit you.
Okay.
Yeah, but seriously, put yourself there. You'll see you can do it.
Yeah, Roger used to do a lot of that stuff in his early years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd write down what they saw.
Yeah.
And then they'd talk to the other people after they did that, and they almost always confirmed exactly what he saw.
Right.
And it is possible when you are in that other space, you can focus your energy on an object and do something with it, like knock it over.
Okay.
Try it.
Sounds good. I'm interested. So anyway, like I say, food for thought, thinking about energies out, you know, flowing through the universe. We think space is vast and empty, but maybe it's got all kind of stuff, you know? Anyway.
I had such acute anxiety right before the big earthquake in Japan. I had such anxiety, and I had no idea where it was really coming from. And then I turned on the TV right at the time that they were just starting to show that big tsunami.
Mm.
And I'm like, holy shit. Because I've been in the Coast Guard auxiliary, so I knew what that wave was going to do. Yeah. So it's sort of like, it was like, oh my God, that's that anxiety. I mean, it's a lot of times I don't know exactly what the feeling is coming from. I know that there's a big feeling. There's a big energy. And you can pick up on that before earthquakes. You can pick up on that on energies that people are feeling somewhere in the world.
Yeah. It's I have no doubt.
Anyway. Enough. I'm gonna shut up on that.
So, no, but what I can relate to right now, my during this holiday time, my older sister passed. And that night when she went, later I knew that she went around 3 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't sleep, so I stayed awake, and I couldn't explain it. I could explain it only later, when I heard about the occurrence that made then sense to me. That's maybe something similar.
It is. You got a visitation. You just didn't know it.
A visitation?
Yeah. Yeah, spirits are freed from the physical form.
I just looked it up, yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I had the same with my parents and the night when Roger passed, yes.
It's that perception of that energy movement from their, and they're not trapped in their body anymore, so they make visitations.
Uh-huh, and keep me awake. Yes. Yeah.
Joan, are you saying that?
Well,
that
she had to, so you would know that this is different.
Simone, are you saying that your sister just passed this past couple of weeks?
Yes.
Oh, my.
On the 30th.
Yep. The one you were having problems with the house?
No. The other one, the older one.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay.
And how is that for you? How are you about that?
Oh. It shook me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was it a surprise? Was she sick?
Yes, it was a heart attack. Yeah.
Yeah. You need to come to get a Boston Heart Diagnostics test. I'm sure you guys have it over there. Anyway, never mind. That's clinical. We could talk about that sometime. Wow. How old was she? That's always difficult when you lose a sibling.
46 and a half.
Wow.
I thought she was your older sister.
Yes.
Two.
Oh, 64, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay.
64 and a half. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, that's young.
Three and a half year older than I am. Yes. Yeah.
Well,
it happens.
It happens.
It happens.
A lot of women, a lot of men have heart attacks at that age. Postmenopausal women.
It's
all the
number
time.
One. Yeah.
I didn't hear that. Two people were speaking. Oh.
A lot of women pass from heart attacks. Postmenopausal heart attacks are quite common. They lose some of their protection that the hormones were giving them for their hearts, and now they're much more susceptible.
It is the number one killer of women. And one of the major reasons is vitamin D deficiency. And nobody talks with anybody about vitamin D because there's a lot of money to be made from vitamin D deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So in your country, I think it's much more preventive medicine, but get your vitamin D level checked. And you can call me and talk to me at some point if you like, but that's just all clinical stuff, and I do think your mental state has a lot to do, but there is a cause and effect if you're sedentary and you have high fats in your diet.
Mm-hmm.
and lots of carbohydrates. So it's important.
I do take vitamin D. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah.
It's regularly.
Yeah. It's important. It's there. I do believe that pulsing the arteries with exercise is extremely important to minimize cardiovascular disease. So, but that's way off of what we're doing with.
Yeah, so let's pull it back around.
I'd like to go back to Andrew for a moment here. Andrew, do you, I can't remember the exact wording that Roger used, but at one point he talked about that when the life on this planet reached the point where stable and reliable place to come alive.
I don't remember this, but okay. Keep
yeah,
going.
That there was that it was that this the implication was this planet did its thing. Its bacteria came alive and so on and so forth when it became a stable and reliable place to come alive in. The eternal being started coming alive in bodies on this planet. And so that, to me, that implies as well that there is an awareness somewhere. And Roger postulated that the dark matter in the universe is where we actually reside. Speaks of energy coming down to the planet. I think that's someone putting together in a form that they think they understand the phenomenon that's actually going on. And that would suggest, I think that this planet is, and us, are awash in the life that particularizes as my eternal being or your eternal being or all of our eternal beings. That form of energy is everywhere present on the planet. And if there's someone who has sensed that and tries to put it into some kind of form that they understand, then I can see them developing an image of energy descending down onto the planet. And I think we all, in one way or another, as we become aware of one kind of phenomenon or another, we try to put it into some kind of form or an image that we think we can understand. So I would suspect then my understanding would be that this person you were doing the past reading, past life reading, was somehow tuning into that energy that exists between all of our eternal selves, our eternal being, and put it into a form that you could read and talk about that had it flowing to the planet. So that would be my take on it.
All right.
Well,
you know, the interesting twist on the story was that so the after the first life describing this stuff, then the second one immediately goes into let's talk about rejection, because I guess if you can see this stuff happening, you can see where people are putting things into their life one way or another. And if you advise them that these things are occurring, you know, here's what you're doing, they may not like hearing that too much. Or they might like hearing it, but, you know, they only want to hear it when they're doing the good stuff, right? Not realizing that the energy they're putting into things, even though I know a lot of people are looking to get energy from things, but putting into it one way or another, is active in everything in your life. It's a vital, vibrant, actual constituent in everything you're doing. Not causal, constituent.
Absolutely.
Part of the mix.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay. And that's what Emergent Being 229 is about.
Okay, I haven't read to that one yet, but and I just wanted to bring that up for folks as food for thought.
Well, one of the things I have to question is, why do we get sick?
Okay.
Okay, because it's not cause, if it's not cause and effect, but we do cause it to get what we, I mean, to, it is displaying to us what we are living. So we're causing it, right? By the way, we're living.
We're living all sorts of constituents,
talk about
illness is an emergent.
Yeah.
And
so
it's an out-picturing of how we are living.
Right, and we're this incarnate being that we chose to come here in this time, and so I'm not sure then why do we die? Why do we have to leave except that we created that? Or we're living that death.
That one I'm sure of, yeah.
So that we don't carry all these memories with us constantly and get ourselves all boxed up with all those memories. So that we
Who says we have to do that?
But that's what we do. And that's why we die. There comes a point when there's too many memories and things like that, and plus the body will atrophy.
That's right. That's what, I ultimately think that we do make mistakes along the way before we come to the realization, damn, if we just would have realized this a long time ago, like when we're 20, and that's the advantage if we can spread that word, because there's an opportunity for those people to not sabotage their own self.
Hey, I want to throw something in here that's really, really important. The universe doesn't give a shit about good, bad mistakes or anything else.
Right.
It's truly a human thing, a body thing to say that we're making a mistake. We're not making mistakes.
Really? Really? That's right.
Whoever.
Okay,
we
but
die,
what I'm
we
saying,
die. That's not us.
That's right.
That's not us. So
that's right. I understand that.
So then why are we talking about mistakes and why does it take so long?
Because I still have to look at the fact that I had a cancer in my body that tells me that for a long time I ignored information or I sabotaged myself along the way. I chose not to see what I was creating.
Why do you want to throw a word in there that says sabotage? That's a real
because
what
yes,
does
it
that
is.
Mean?
Whoa.
Working
I
against
understand.
Yourself.
I did work against myself, and why did I have to go to that extreme to find what I needed to find that I didn't have to do all that?
Yeah, well,
was it just to get that message?
You're twisting it up a little bit, Sharon. It is that
Okay. Everywhere
along the way, we do what we think is in our best interest. Always.
Right.
No matter what.
I don't know that I did all the time. I think I did sabotage myself. And
if you sabotaged yourself, it was because you thought that was in your best interest.
Right.
Or what I chose to do at the time.
Right. So
yes.
Always
you thought that was in your best interest. Even avoiding the life you want to live, people do that because in some weird way, they desire it. It may not be what they want, ultimately, like from a context of eternal.
Of course, it could be the excitement of being the human.
Mm.
And being and doing human beings.
Then we are afraid of creating a life we truly desire.
Well,
I don't know that it's that.
I was just definitely having a lot of fun with excitement in my life, but it was not a healthy excitement.
Well,
but
anger and excitement, anger and struggle can be exciting.
Yes.
For people who think that.
Yes.
All right.
Oh, yeah. What did you say, Misty?
I didn't say anything right now.
Before?
Oh, I was talking about that sabotage was considered working against ourselves, and what I said is that no matter what we do, even if we want to call it sabotage, It's not really, because we always think that it's in our best interest. Anything we do, even if sabotaging ourselves is what we are doing, we feel that that's in our best interest.
You know, in the broader context, that we didn't come alive to learn, grow, and all that kind of stuff. And to suggest that we've got to figure out our mistakes is that we're learning, growing, and overcoming. Again, I want to stress, from my understanding, is the universe doesn't give a shit, and our eternal selves, they don't see us making a mistake.
We're kind of like an exploratory probe that came out from the eternal being.
Yeah, and it's what's going on here? It's not like, oh, I better do this
and
or
so
we're
it's
screwed.
Come to experience. And that's what we do
here.
Well,
you know
we
what?
Experience.
I chose to have a very difficult time from the beginning, so.
Yes, and now you can choose other.
Right.
And that's all there is. Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, you sabotage yourself or you did things or there was something that you should have learned, but now you've made another decision. That's all.
Yeah, well, I'm no longer young.
Yeah, well, you come back and
have
another body.
It's a little bit of a sabotage. Huh?
You'll come back and have another body.
Yeah.
But when you speak about sabotage, it's a self-judgment, I think. Or mistake is also a self-judgment to me.
You know what? Maybe I don't know. Yeah, I know I'm a great doctor. I know that I should not be limited because other people choose to limit me because I'm not board certified. And I know, yes, what am I supposed to do to make them change their mind? I don't know how to work around that. And it's the only thing, I mean, it's a limitation because I can't be the kind of doctor I want to be because I can't get paid. And if I'm not going to get paid, then why do I work? Well, you know. So I know that I see this as my own limitation. I don't know how to be other than I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, try out to be other.
Well,
that serves you better.
Yeah, I'm being a part of
that. Yeah, that was the word I was looking before. Roger explained me all actions are to serve ourselves.
I mean, I'm actually satisfied with the way my life is going, so, you know, what's my dissatisfaction then? I don't know.
Well, maybe
can
I would suggest...
Comment, Karen?
Oh, go ahead.
What's that?
Yo. I'd like to offer a comment, Sharon, and it's just my opinion, that's all it is that I find you to be one of the more powerful personalities that I've met in my life, and I've met a lot, very, very strong personality, and I suspect is that the difficulties that you say that you created or lived or experienced in your life came from that power. How to put it?
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
always being well received by people around you.
What's that?
The power that I say that I notice in your personality and your being has not always been well received by people around you.
Is that a question?
No, I'm suggesting that's may have occurred.
Yeah.
And that you experience some pushback. And if I think in broader sense, I have an idea or a sense that it would be hard for you to set aside your personal being self to make room for the expression of an eternal being. And that a lot of the struggle that you have experienced in your life perhaps is a pattern that would relate to the difficulties that you've had in clearly, well, let's use a current term, communing with your eternal self, that there was a sense that you might lose something if you did that, because that seems to be a long-term pattern that you didn't want to lose that sense of power that you have. And I'm wondering if you wouldn't see setting your personal being aside for a moment in order to communion, if you could see that's not losing anything, that that's a great big huge gain.
Mm-hmm.
And that that's anyway, that's, I just wanted to express that sense that I've developed as I've become to know you, Sharon.
Oh, I can connect with what you said. Is that understandable?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I kind of like feel the same way. I mean, for me and for Sharon. Yeah.
Well, I guess I recognize it because I'm in it too. Stepping aside, I saw it as stepping aside for my eternal being, and I would, you know, that we joke in my family that you can't tell me the time of day.
Actually, I listen. I just still, you know, do things my own way. Anyway. I do understand that, and that is what I am working on, is that communion. Mm-hmm. And that's actually quite exciting to me.
Well, do you read the Eternal Self page on Facebook?
No, I don't know about that.
She doesn't do Facebook. She doesn't do Facebook.
Oh, it doesn't do Facebook, okay.
So what is it?
Well, it's meant to be a bit of a discussion page. It's private. It's only those who are signed in who can read it and post.
Uh-huh.
It's meant to be a discussion forum, and it doesn't get used all that often. But I posted something over the Christmas period that I want to share with you now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I had this opportunity to have a conversation with my eternal self, because it's not been an easy task for me to communion with my eternal being. And I decided to have a conversation to see if I could figure out what was going on and see if I could accomplish it in a more easy, elegant way. And what it turned out is that this conversation started, it was really easy, and it was around whether or not I had chosen the correct name for my eternal being. And that it variously over time it's been Gabriel or Masters or, you know, some names, and it, none of them tended to connect. And so I was asking, after I'd established contact with my eternal self, what name I should be using. And my eternal self answered back saying, well, it doesn't really matter to me. Naming is kind of it's for you, not for me. And I'm with you all the time anyway, whether you know you have a name for me.
Yeah.
And then my eternal self said, expand your awareness out into the stars. Just let it float. Just go out there and take your awareness way out into the stars. And I did that, and I sensed that, and my awareness went way, way, way out into the universe. And then my eternal self said, now focus on something that's close physically by you in the room that you're in. And I had a bit of a resistance, because I thought, well, if I do that, I'm going to lose my focus out into the stars. And I was advised that no, that's not a problem. You can do both. You can be focused in something in your everyday life right in front of you, and maintain your awareness out into the stars. And he said, in doing that, you will be in touch with me. You can communion with me and be focused in your everyday life, and you can do it both at the same time. And he said, mark how it feels. And at that moment it felt like I had this presence along the left hand side of my body, my head, my shoulder, my arms, my legs, my hip. That he said, remember that, and that you will know when you experience that sensation that you are communion with me. And if you find yourself out of communion, if you're struggling, remember that sense, and that will help you come back into the communion. And that was a little just before Christmas, and it's been fabulous that whenever I'd hit one of my typical struggle points on aspects of my life that I would gnaw on and fuss and fume about and struggle, I would remember to check where my sense was. And I would see that or feel that it was missing on this left-hand side. And I would bring back that sense of feeling on the left-hand side. And whatever it was that I was fussing over, the fussing disappeared. The issue itself was there. But I had moved into a place where there was no struggle. And that whatever the issue was, I could deal with. Or dismiss as not being worthy of any time, and all the struggle pieces of it would just go away. And that I've been really pleased about realizing I didn't have to find the right name in order to get myself in communion. And that was a great enlightenment for me, a great aha. And I don't know if something like that can happen to somebody else. And the really interesting thing as well is that when I do past life reading, my sense of it is I shift to the right to get out of my way in order to do a past life reading. And here, if I want a communion with my eternal self, I shift my awareness to the left. I haven't really thought that one through to see what that might mean or what that represents. But it's been a really fulfilling experience, and it really feels different. My whole, in many respects, my whole life feels different. That it's so much easier now to move my center of attention over to the left and end up experiencing life in a wholly different way than it was before. Remember last week, or not last week, whenever it was, we were doing the reading for Origin, that there was a passage that said to the effect, I can't remember the exact words, but it was that that in communion you'll be free of doubt, you'll be free of indecision, you'll be free of all those kinds of things. And that's been my experience when I finally found a way that I could reliably connect and commune. It is a very, very different experience of life. And I went through the last 2 days here. We'll take a picture and send it out. We built a cat. Karen's telling me, move along, move along. Other people might want to speak. But we built a cat tree out of a downed arbutus tree. You folks might not know what an arbutus tree is, but anyway, it's perfect. It's a really neat foundation for building one of those cat trees that cats can lay on and view us from above. But the last 2 days of really building this thing up from scratch, and with, you know, the plan was something that was in Karen's head, and that normally speaking, if I don't get a vision of it, I really don't want to do it. And it was Karen's head, and she had a vision, and we've spent the last 2 days having an absolute ball building this thing. When I normally would have got into resistance about this, that, and the other thing, because I didn't have a clear image. And we ended up having this great time. And it's erected in our kitchen now. Anyway, Karen's right. I'm talking too much. Somebody else's turn.
Sounds like fun.
It is. It has been, and I'm looking forward to continuing.
Send some pictures of the cat tree.
I will.
With cats in it.
Yeah.
Okay, so are we ready to get on with the book?
Why not?
Well, if I just say one thing. So, you know, I have not known how these things were going to go without Roger here to keep us on course. I noticed since we started this back again, you know, since Misty invited us back and stuff, that we tend to fall into our old habits of problem solving and a number of other problems. But, you know, what I would like to hope, what I would like to see anyway, is that everybody have the, what do you want to call it, the composure, the, you know, non-judgment, and the ability to stand up to our habits and, you know, not let us go too far astray on things. And so I'm glad we had this experience. I hope we, you know, can practice getting better at it, because it seems like we'll all benefit if we do that. If we just let things run off and run off and run off, we're going to get lost.
Right. But this is right. Good tonight.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. I mean, I guess good is a judgment, isn't it? It just happened.
This is our process. This is our process. We're
yeah,
a process.
Yeah.
The reason why I let it go on, Andrew, was that I think that sometimes...
Well, I didn't object to...
Sometimes you need communioning going on where you start feeling more like a family instead of always just a strict learning or grasping.
Not only that, but, you know, I still do have issues with... because I've seen many, many groups of people say, oh yeah, I'm doing this and therefore nothing's going to ever happen to me, okay? And so that's why I always kind of question, because people still do have physical ailments that are there for them to see, but if that was all it is, then shouldn't we be able to just show them the way to look at it and the ailment would disappear? And the answer to that is no, it doesn't. So why?
Well, maybe it does.
Maybe.
Because you don't know what their thoughts are in their head. You don't know what the constituents are in their life. You don't know what they gain by having this illness. It may be something totally other than you think it is.
Exactly.
So you can't go to those kind of judgments. You just know that that is what it is.
But isn't it a mistake to even show them others?
No. What you do is say,
okay,
you have these alternatives out there. You choose. You decide what you're going to do with your life. And then live
it. I'm not sure how, because Roger always says you don't have to do anything.
You don't, but he also said that...
I don't think that's entirely what he said.
Well, and he also, but he resisted from telling people things. He did just try to show people, I think. But later on,
they can
decide. Right.
Right. He would not tell them how it is. He would allow them to glean for themselves how it is for them. If I tell you something, then you can reject it. But if you come to an understanding within yourself, then you won't. And so what you do is you offer the things that would allow them to make up their own understandings and come to a place where they're good with it. And it could be that they just walk away.
Right, but the understanding they come to is what they are doing.
Or the understanding is that I can do other.
Of course, that's yes.
And I think it's really important because I've had Roger remind me of this so many times. As a healer, it is not okay to assume that just because somebody's sick or dying or dead, that there's been a problem, that they've done something wrong, that they've been living a way they didn't want to live. It's how they felt about the illness or the injury or the whatever, how they feel about the dying, how they live that. And just the fact of an illness doesn't mean anybody is living against their anything. It's just the body doing its thing. And what is of interest to us, I think, is how the being inside the body feels about it and how the being lives it. And I think it's really easy to jump to the conclusion that when somebody's ill, that they're doing something wrong and we need to show them that, and we don't. I don't know if
I agree. Oh.
Does anybody go to the doctor?
What's that?
Yeah.
Do any of you guys go to the doctor? If you went to the doctor and said, I have this problem, and they said, well, it's showing you how you need to be, I mean, or what you're living. Showing you what.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's not what my patients are happy with.
I don't.
It's not showing me how I'm living. It's showing me what my body's doing.
But it is out picturing. How you feel about life, how you feel about all sorts of things.
I don't think body is showing me how I'm feeling. The question is, how do I feel about what my body's doing? And that tells you how I'm living.
Yes.
But if I have a broken leg and it's of no issue to me, I have a broken leg, I've put cast on it, got a heel, whatever, I'm going to carry on with my life and I'm not bothered by it, then that's very different from, I've got a broken leg and it's the end of the world and oh my God, what a victim I am and that was horrible and I'm so
dead. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The injury or the illness itself is a hint, but Roger always said what's really important is how somebody feels about it.
And that really is.
We often jump to the conclusion that just because somebody's sick, just because somebody's got cancer, it means they must be doing this thing. And we used to say, what does that say about the way you're living your life? That they must be doing this thing somehow out of integrity with who they are and who their eternal being is and their eternal self and their true desires. And I don't think that's the way he intended it.
I agree with you, Karen.
And he always said that if you go to the doctor, you should also see the outpicturing and exactly how you said, how you feel about that outpicturing. So, yeah.
So he pounded on us healers because we tend to jump to the conclusion that there's something wrong that needs to be fixed, and there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge assumption.
Yeah, you are actually always in perfect harmony with yourself.
They're certainly not in perfect harmony because they're very discontented.
Yeah.
And that's the harmony they're living.
Exactly. There is no general harmony.
There's no unharmony. The only question is that the harmony you want to be doing?
Right.
Yeah.
And in knowing what you are doing, you have the possibility to do other. When you don't know what you are doing,
Go ahead.
You cannot do other because you don't know.
Is there one single statement for a patient that lives in that might spark their interest? Would it be just that, that how long do they want to, or are they okay with being in this state of disharmony?
But it's not
disharmony
for them.
Dang it.
Okay.
Not disharmony.
Okay.
The only question, I don't...
Okay, harmony that, okay. Yeah, because they're not disharmonious with themselves.
That's right.
With their own.
Yeah.
Then why do they come to the doctor? How are they feeling
about
it?
They want relief.
Okay. How are they feeling about it?
Right.
They want relief from the feeling.
I often think about the body as like my car.
I do too.
It get me down the road, so I take it to the mechanic to fix it. But am I in an emotional knot about it? Am I seeing it as an illustration of my... whether I'm fit to be a human being or not? No, it's just my car.
I haven't failed in any way. And that's what I think that a lot of times people...
Barely hear you, Misty.
I haven't failed in any way, but I think that's what a lot of people think. I've done something wrong, or I've failed, or, God is punishing me, or any number of things. And that's just not what is going on. It's just exactly who and where you are at that moment. Now, how do you feel about that? If it's good for you, then you continue it. If you want something else, then you do other. And sometimes other is going to the doctor. At least people with our understandings. Now, the general populace, no, that's not so. They think
What I mean. That's where I just don't understand how I can condense some of this information to help to start to spread it to people that I see. And the issue is that I probably would have to be seeing other people that are attracted to this. Because most people that are going to the doctor are seeking something they want, not something I have to offer.
Yeah, they want to continue their lives the way it is, but have all the outpictures go away. And it doesn't work that way.
Right. It doesn't work that way. It anyway.
But you could offer them some insights. What the illness is out picturing.
So they can have
another constituent to put into their lives.
That actually works for people I see in private.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the people I see at work, forget it. They just want a prescription.
Well, then just realize that that's how you make your money. And
yeah.
That's all. And then...
That's okay.
And that's
no,
okay.
That's, well, it is because it pays my bills right now.
Right.
So... For that, I'm very thankful. I have time off so I can actually enjoy participating in class and living my own life on outside of it. And it is pretty portable.
Good.
So lots of benefits, but yes, there's a part of me that maybe it's interesting to see that every day, all day. The victimization that's going on.
Well,
anyway.
You just have to slowly enlighten the world that there are other choices.
Yeah, that's what I have to, my challenge, start thinking of how can I share this in one or two simple sentences, that there is another way. Because it's interesting, because doing this online, you know, I have actually built up quite a following. Not forever living online, but anyway.
Okay.
Another issue.
Let's get back to.
Yes.
Why we're here. Well, that is part of why we're here, but to get on with the reading of the book.
It is about constituents. Being.
Okay. So, with that, we're going to start at number 229, Emergent Beings. And the first one on our list, as usual, is Andrew. Did we lose Andrew? Well, I know he has his football game going on tonight for his alma mater or something.
Let me read it.
Okay, so let's start.
Let me read it.
Yeah, we'll start with you.
Are you, like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, attempting to cause the happiness you desire at the end of the rainbow? Or maybe you are hoping to cause or induce the eternal self you truly desire? Of course I'd be trying to cause it.
How does that fit to our discussion before?
Yes.
I know, I was laughing about that as it was going on.
Yeah. Well, I needed to read it.
Okay, Simone, why don't you read the next one?
Yeah, okay, it's my turn. 230. Most religious and secular teachings of life promise that if you will surrender your physical self and life in one or another,
one form,
and be faithful, follow their sacred beliefs and commandments, and properly suffer your lessons and burdens in trust and silence, you will be joyfully and enrichingly rewarded in your next life, which is usually a spiritual existence separate from your present physical self and life.
Yep, that's what they do.
That is what they do. Okay, do we have Andrew back yet? Okay, Karen?
231. Unfortunately, you do not suffer in silence, for your mind, emotions,
your body and relationships and your life all scream with anguish, sadness, and disappointment, with emotional and physical pain and afflictions, with lack of real meaning and purpose, and with general unhappiness. But you don't have any of these problems, do you?
You see how this is relating to what you were asking about, Sharon?
Yes.
Okay. 232. Last week, a man wanted to know why he had so much resistance to declaring himself and living a big purpose in life, or resistance to living in a way that would make him happy. He wants to know if he had some awful problem hidden away in his past that he's been punishing himself for or resisting. Our response was, the problem is not your resistance. The problem is that you are trying to do something to cause your happiness. Mm-hmm. And you could also say, to cause your health, to cause this, to cause that. Okay. Patrick.
233. Are you, in the same way, trying to cause your happiness? Are you treating happiness as a goal or reward you can achieve or attain to, or be rewarded? If so, you should be aware that attempting to cause happiness, or anything for that matter, produces many problems. Because while struggling to cause happiness, you are unhappily living your unhappiness.
Uh-huh.
It's obvious in your life. Since happiness is now a future goal, what happens after resolving your goal is that following a triumphant moment, such as earning a college degree, getting married, or finding the perfect job, you must set another happiness goal out in the future and struggle on, unhappily so, to your new goal. Since happiness is your desired goal, you will judge everything that seems to lead toward happiness as good, and everything that seems to lead elsewhere or to unhappiness as bad, which traps you in an endless good-bad judgment.
Now, can you see if you put in health or illness or something like that and read this paragraph, that you would glean a lot about that also?
Yeah, but I stand in quicksand.
What does that mean?
It just keeps sucking me back in.
But then you're a victim.
Quick what?
So, quicksand. It's just, you know, quicksand will suck you in. So it's just so frustrating because, it's easy to get sucked back into.
Uh-huh.
Then you just pick yourself up and start over. You just have to keep doing that until after a while it becomes your everyday way of doing life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can do. Okay, Sharon, read the next one for us, please.
Where are we?
34.
34, okay. All goals follow this same pattern. And since your happiness is a goal out there, obviously you don't have happiness to live or give away. You have to get happiness before you can cause happiness. But since you believe you reap as you sow or give unto others, you cannot give happiness, so you cannot receive happiness. Well, I think I need to just do that one every day.
perhaps.
Hmm.
Anybody else want to talk about
go
that
on.
One?
Oh.
No? Okay, Simone.
Huh. 235. Oh, certainly. You can be happy traveling or surfing or dancing, but that excitement and happiness is very temporary and deceptive because it is based on relief from work and everyday problems. Relation of difficult relationships. Or easing of mental emotion concerns, not on true happiness, such that the happiness of your excitement and relief quickly fades and sucks the life out of your life as it passes away.
Okay.
It's an overcoming then, yes.
Yeah, there were some of the previous pieces of this chronicle where he cautioned against diverting ourselves from the problem.
Yeah.
Okay, Karen?
No, Andrea?
I think he's involved in the Georgia game.
236. Happiness is emergent, not caused. But you don't believe that, or really understand emergent, do you? So you judge endlessly and struggle to cause happiness. Then, when that doesn't work, you probably believe you can be happy by giving up your desires and struggles and simplifying your life. But you will never find happiness in not desiring or not doing or having. Negating myself to happiness. Get rid of all the things that I don't like. And what will be left is happiness.
Right. Passage 237. If declaring what you want and having that is a reasonable description of happiness, then though you can find some satisfaction in giving up or opposing things, you will find no real happiness in that. And living happily will keep you judging how to live happily.
Hmm.
Okay. Patrick?
So declaring what you want is happiness. A description of happiness. No.
Well, declaring what you want and living that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And living, yeah.
You have to have the action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Declaring alone is not sufficient.
Right. There must be a doing.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick?
238. Believing you can cause happiness by putting more passion, faith, or resolution into your doing or not doing. You passionately, faithfully, and more resolutely get more of the unhappiness and lack you are living and struggling with and against. If we have in any way opened your eyes or mind to these matters, let's return to our description of happiness. Being one of declaring what you want and having that. Yeah, I can see that, you know, the beginning of that passage. If I just work harder at it and just get at it harder and it just make it really important to me, that there's tons of people, that, including myself, would say that doesn't work.
You know, I just don't understand. If I hadn't worked hard to change who I am in this lifetime, because I chose to come into this family that was very, very difficult, and I chose not to stay that person. So was that wrong that I actually worked at being different?
No, you made a choice.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Because everything says you shouldn't do, you shouldn't do it, you shouldn't do, it's just a being.
No,
you
make a choice,
okay,
and go that way.
Okay.
You just came to a fork and you said, oh, okay, I could keep doing what everybody else in my family is doing and live that way, or I could live other. I choose to live
other. I'm living other. Yeah, okay.
Read the next one?
Oh, me?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Is it 236?
Nine.
239. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Causing in any form completely destroys your free will. For if your desires and choices must be caused, you can never be certain of having what you choose or declare. For as Aristotle said over 2,300 years ago, that which causes can certainly withhold its causing. And that is true. That which causes can certainly withhold its causing.
You understand that?
No.
Patrick, why don't you explain that one to her?
Well, if there's, I think you have to go back and take a look at the totality, that hardly anybody I know figures that they can directly cause anything, that there is always trying to get in, let's say, in on the good side of the power that exists in their lives, because that's involved somehow or other in the causing. And if you're to successfully cause, you need that power on your side. And so that which causes, and particularly in the context of Aristotle's quote, that which causes can certainly withhold its causing, and that we're talking about here, then, as I tried to describe, that we almost always figure that there is something that's involved with us trying to cause, and it can withhold its causing. That leads to people praying for outcome, wishing for outcome, because they're not entirely sure that they can actually cause it, because something's involved here that would withhold the causing.
Okay. But again, when it's a decision to do something to create an outcome that you want, and knowing that it may not happen, but you, like I would oftentimes look at, how can I best approach this for the best outcome or to get what I want?
It is, and that is an attempt at causing.
I was sure darn successful.
Was it always successful?
Most always, yes. Things like getting into medical school, things like just the things that happened to me to move away. Again, that was a huge thing in my life, was to be able to move away from my family and do my life and cause my life to be what I needed it to be. So I'm not sure I understand how causing me to be who I am and the life I wanted, how that's wrong. Or
okay,
a causing that...
You keep looking at it from the causing side, but let's look at it from the other side, which is, you desired to be something, and then you went towards that. Not away from what was going on, but towards what you wanted.
Right, right. Okay.
You keep pulling the negative stuff into it, but it's not. It's that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just my. Yes, it is a defect in the way I'm saying it. I'm. I don't know how to change my
brain. But it just means that you're still struggling with that. That's all.
I am.
Hey, yo.
I am. Uh-huh.
I think I heard everything Miss Dee said there, but you didn't. I can see you didn't cause anything. You took action in your life. And there was a number of things that were emergent in your life. And it is the long
term. Yes.
Hey. Sorry, guys.
No, I believe he's just reinforcing what he's saying.
Yeah. It's a long-term pattern is to use that term, causing. It's really hard at times to give it up.
Yes, I see. But what you're saying is that, yes, I did I took an action. And I actually do, now that I actually am very aware of being in communion with my higher eternal being, I believe that that has been what has fed me all along.
And it's this notion that we can cause things, and it's a language thing, and we use it habitually.
I knew when to go left.
Yeah, in fact, we are acting.
Yeah.
And things end up being emergent. And that when we tell our stories about what we did, because we're so married to cause and effect, the story we tell narrows it down to what we think was cause and what the effect was. There's a whole bunch of other things that took place that we don't make part of our story because we can't see it as the direct cause and effect. But there's all kinds of things that are emergent in our lives as we act that are almost countless, but they don't fit a tidy story of cause and effect.
Okay. Anyway, thank you.
So, who just read that one? Was that you, Patrick?
That is true.
Who just read?
I think that was Sharon.
Okay, Simone.
240 now.
Okay. However, the universe is never denying you a belief, thought, attitude, emotion, word, and action, or a desire or experience, has never withheld or limited your choices or free will. If you want happiness, all you have to do is live in every moment just as you would live that eternally. Oh.
And to me, that's one of the very, very powerful statements of forever living.
I agree.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Put only into life what you would do forever and ever.
Yes.
Yes.
Did I hear us have Andrew back, or is he gone again? Okay, Karen.
What is he doing?
He's watching a football game. He warned me.
Oh. Okay.
241. If you direct the eternal aspects of yourself into causing, especially causing what you believe you do not have, you will deny these aspects of yourself and deny yourself in the process. Does this sound somewhat like yourself in life today? So when it says especially causing what you believe you do not have, so that's trying to fulfill something that I think I don't have.
Right.
Cause it.
And you're trying to cause it.
That's a wanting? Is that a wanting?
Yeah, it's a wanting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a deep feeling of lack. And there's a judgment in there that goes along with that.
Okay.
But also, if what I want is a big house and I put a bunch of energy into causing the big house, I think the question is what is it that I'm trying to create in the big house? And that's, let's say, a sense of fulfillment. I will deny these aspects of myself by trying to cause the big house. I will deny my sense of fulfillment.
Absolutely.
Mm. Now, why does it say if you direct the eternal aspects of yourself into causing?
Because that's when you listen, and you communion with your eternal self to know how is it to be.
The previous statement was all you have to do is live as in every moment, just as you would live that eternally.
It would unfold for you.
Then it doesn't mean that if only the good stuff, I say sarcastically, if you direct the eternal aspects of yourself into causing, then that is what you're giving yourself eternally. If you're directing your energy into causing, then you're actually directing your eternal self into that as well. Remember, our eternal self, this is some wise old something or other that will always tell us the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
The eternal self is very subject to what we do as well.
Yeah, that's why so many people have a misconception, because when they talk about a higher self, they think that they have this great wisdom and understandings and all that kind of stuff, and it's just not so.
No, that's not, yeah.
You are the eternal self in action.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Huh? Okay, passage 242. Continue judging and trying to cause, and you will continue self in life as usual. Is your life as usual so enjoyable, enrichingly fulfilling, satisfying, and filled with happiness that you would be content in living your present self and life eternally?
Yep, he just reinforced what he said in the previous one, that if you're going to keep on causing, are you sure you want to do that forever?
Okay, Patrick, you're on.
243. You cannot move on while hanging on. I like that. Especially if you are hanging on tightly to causing, creating, composing. For the eternal matters of life are emergent, which means that while wholes are greater than the sum of their parts, emergent wholes just appear complete and uncomposed from nothing. There is no occurring process.
Ex nihilo.
Okay, yeah.
Ex nihilo,
yeah. Out of nothing, yeah.
And that's the tough part. When we've been so married to causing, creating, and composing, the whole notion that something can just occur out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
What are you telling me? What are you telling me? Yep, but that's the way it works.
Yep. Okay, Sharon, I believe you're next.
Let's see here. Are we on 246?
244.
Sorry about that. The properties of water, such as wetness, flowability, cohesion, and surface tension, do not exist in the constituents of hydrogen and oxygen. Yet, when properly combined, water miraculously appears, and so do these and many other properties of water, none of which are caused. They suddenly appear. They are emergent and appear wholly complete from nothing, just as water appears uncaused from the constituents of hydrogen and oxygen. No prayer or change or ceremony or is required to cause water or these properties. In fact, if you combine these molecules, you cannot keep water or these properties from appearing. But because you are so focused on causing, you don't realize that emergence has occurred. This story. I guess what would he call that? Because he didn't like examples. So what would he call that?
An illustration.
Illustration.
Illustration. Okay. Let me write that in there.
Okay, Simone, would you read for us passage 245?
245. As Einstein declared, everything is a miracle, or nothing is a miracle. And emergent is an open secret or miracle of the universe. If it were not so, you would not have free will. For after selecting the constituents you desire, you would then have to discover how to cause what you desire. But emergent ensures that by selecting the constituents you desire, the whole is guaranteed. And even more emergently appears and it is offered. These understandings of emergent and greater wholes are vital. Because they offer you a fuller and finer understanding of life and the universe.
That's no,
it has to be so.
Yep.
Well, and in living only that which we be prepared to live and experience eternally, is the only process that's involved in terms of selecting the constituents. That's, we live them and only live that which we would be prepared to live eternally.
Okay. I guess we're back around to you, Karen.
Through your struggle to cause what you desire, you withhold the eternal richness and fullness of life and the universe from yourself and life.
So we pretty well box everything up.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, passage 247. The universe does not unfold and reveal you. You reveal yourself and unfold the universe. and all of life by setting emergent into motion. But most people, seeing or sensing the pattern of emergent in their life and all around them, declare it to be God and God's plan, and maybe in a sense, I guess that should be.
Yeah, sense.
And maybe in a sense it is, but it is not a fixed plan or purpose for you to follow. It is a dependable pattern that holds everything steady and consistent and reliable for you.
I really like that first part. The universe does not unfold and reveal you. You reveal yourself and unfold the universe.
Yeah, that's pretty neat saying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those quotes that almost is a bumper sticker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Patrick, you're on.
All right. 248. It is sad to see how, instead of fully living the constituents you desire at every moment and letting emergent provide greater holes for you, by trying to cause what you want, you have, in so many ways, constantly mismanaged and misdirected so much of the self and life you truly desire, without realizing that the problem lies in your attempts to cause what you desire and limit what you do not want, all of which conceals emergent at work all around you, and you expand and intensify the problem by complaining loudly that others just don't understand, when actually, by remaining in cause and avoiding, you do not understand.
Mm-hmm. True.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Mm-hmm. Sharon, 249, please.
Yep. Emergent protects your free will. To be and live as you truly desire, with every belief, thought, attitude, emotion, word, and action. But emergence does not function as a way for you to impose your will on others, for that would interfere with their free will to live the constituents in greater wholes they desire.
That's the trap I follow often.
What's that?
Yeah, I do too.
That's the trap I follow often. That I would have to have everyone thinking the way I do.
Go, kid.
It's never going to work.
Yeah. No. Yeah. 250?
Yes.
You obviously believe you cause things, and you struggle endlessly to cause good and right things. But do you really believe you can actually determine what is correct in each situation? What is right and desirable for yourself and others? What consequences should occur? Or that you even see each situation clearly and fully and know how to cause what you desire, or prevent what you do not want. yeah
what she said. You want to try it again?
Yes. You obviously believe you cause things, and you struggle endlessly to cause good and right things. But do you really believe you can actually determine what is correct in each situation? What is right and desirable for yourself and others? What consequences should occur? or that you can even see each situation clearly and fully and know how to cause what you desire or prevent what you do not want.
So all of that, that passage, is that when it says what do you really believe you can actually determine what is correct in each situation, what is right and desirable for yourself and others? We're talking about consequences there, aren't we?
Yep.
Not the right action in and of itself, but what we believe the consequences of action will be.
And could you ever possibly do that?
And not.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, Karen, take us on.
251. Only when you end your judgments and stop trying to cause will you see how richly full, complete, and eternal Emergent is in the universe, and how unconditionally willing the universe is to offer all of that to you by emergently fulfilling your true desire. Only you limit, interfere with, and forsake yourself and life through causing.
Right.
Well,
no argument there.
252. Is your personal world God, the creator and sustainer of all things through causing, is unconditionally loving? What? Let's try that again.
In your personal world. God.
Hey, back.
Oh, I'm sorry, you guys. I had a family emergency here.
Yep, okay.
The football game?
All right. Yeah, University of Alabama won in overtime after clawing back from being totally behind and at halftime. It was unreal. So like my dad and my brothers and my sisters and sisters-in-law were all calling each other going nuts. So I had it on mute. I apologize.
Yeah, we know.
It was an emergent miracle, so I'm all into this one.
Yeah. That was necessary.
Okay,
yeah.
And the kid from Hawaii, the true freshman, is the one who he didn't play much all year. He came in at halftime, and he took it all the way. He delivered. It was amazing.
Wow, great. Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, sorry about that, guys. Okay.
So I'll try it again.
How do you read this one?
In your personal world, God, the creator and sustainer of all things through causing, is unconditionally loving, while in your eternal world, Emergent is God, is the creator and sustainer of all things through itself, and is unconditional, and in that is always truly loving.
I wonder if it would it be accurate to say, well, in your eternal world, Emergent is God-ing.
I like it.
Yeah,
you like
I
it?
Do. Yeah.
Thinking about what Pat said at the beginning, Christing.
Well, I think the point here is that it may be unsaid that in your personal world, God, the creator and sustainer of all things, is unconditional loving, but is also the great causer.
Yeah. And God is a very static, stationary thing, noun, in that world. In my eternal world, it's always in, you see that it's always in action, always in motion.
Yeah.
Static.
Okay, Patrick, would you read 253, please?
If you understand this, then certainly you realize that, like water and its property, which are emergent of the constituent hydrogen, oxygen, actually communion. You as a personal self and your properties are emergent of memories actively communion. you as an emergent self and
no,
your
eternal self.
Eternal self.
You as an eternal self and your properties are emergent of your personal body, personal self body actively communion. And you as a resplendent illuminated being and your properties are emergent of your personal being eternally, eternal being actively communion.
And that's a mouthful.
No kidding.
You see how all the communioning goes on there?
Yep.
It's pretty impressive.
Can I read that again, please?
Absolutely.
If you understand this, then certainly you realize that, like water and its properties, which are emergent of the constituents, hydrogen, oxygen, actually communion. You, as a personal self, and your properties are emergent of memory, actively communion. And you, as an eternal self, and your properties are emergent of your personal self body, actively communion. And you, as a resplendent, illuminated being, and your properties are emergent of your personal being, eternal being, actively communion. And I think that one of the critical words in this is actively. And particularly you as a resplendent, illuminated being and your properties are emergent of your personal being, eternal being, actively communion. That would suggest that in the absence of being awarefully, actively communion, it's a little hard to see what's emergent or is there anything emergent at all.
Water emergent, not personal eternal being.
Are you, stating something or asking something, Simone?
I'm stating something.
Okay, what do you
without say? Actions?
Yeah.
There are no new constituents. So there is no communion then, and it probably will be a random thing and not an awareful communion.
Yeah, this is set up like my reading is that this is. It's conditional around that term actively. And so
can you say that again?
Well, it seems I'll read one line. It was, you as a personal being and your properties are emergent of memories, actively communion. Now, if I'm not aware of and actively living it, like memories and memories, then do we end up being able to detect properties that are emergent of personal self? Or am I making too big of a point here?
Well, each one of those are actively coming together. Because communion is an active doing.
Yeah. There's no communion if it's not actively done.
Right.
Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then if that's what you are asking, then that is yes. It has to be an act of doing. And a lot of times we're actively doing without realizing it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to stop there for this week. And we will pick up...
Which is what number again?
254.
We'll start next week with 254.
All right.
Okay. So, with that, we will say good night.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Drop us on.
Yeah, thank you.
See you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
All right.
Bye for now.
Good night for now. Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye for now.